Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Headstrong. If this is your first time listening, my name is Louis Strong and I am the host of this podcast. Headstrong is a podcast where I sit down with a number of people in the public eye to talk to them about what the word headstrong means to them. And to me, it means to believe in yourself, to talk about your vulnerabilities and reinforce your self-worth. Joining me on this episode of Headstrong is TikTok sensation Kieran Hamilton. Kieran struck to fame during lockdown with his incredible teacher's persona on the app, but spoke to me poignantly about his relationships with his family and his own mental health. So I really hope you enjoy this episode of Headstrong. But first, a quick note from our series sponsor, RCK Partners. RCK Partners specialise in helping UK businesses claim R&D tax relief across the engineering, agricultural and tech space. If you'd like to find out about this valuable source of funding for your business, head to rck.partners or follow the link in the podcast description. Kieran, thank you so much for joining me on Headstrong. How's it going?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thank you so much. I'm delighted you've joined me on my podcast because you've been a regular feature on my For You page on TikTok, given what can only be described, and maybe you will describe it differently, as a kind of exaggerated stereotypes of teachers in comedy sketches. And I think it's hilarious. How did you come up with this concept and idea? Where did it come from?
I started in lockdown. I was so bored and just found myself, I was at drama school actually, and then COVID cut that short. And then I just wanted to be creative. I like thrive and feel normal when I'm just creative. So I just started making random TikToks, and then a memory come up about being in school and exam hall. And I just made a video and thought nothing of it. And then like there's so many memories from school that I remembered and thought, you know what, this is a thing here. And I just ran with it. And yeah.
When TikTok first came about, did you think that, you know, because I remember I resisted for a while on TikTok and everyone was just like, oh, yeah, God, yeah, it's an app for however, what, you know, like 16-year-olds, that's what they're doing. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll resist then for a while. Lockdown comes along and then you're like, okay, fine, I'll do it. When you started on the app, did you think, okay, this is, you know, because it's like, ultimately, it's like you're, to an extent, part of your living now, your existence. Like, yeah, did you ever think that's an opportunity or a possibility? You only think about social media in a general like that.
I never in a million years thought that I'd ever do social media as a job, like ever, ever, ever. And it just spiraled into it. So yeah, it is weird.
When you sit down and do these sketches and stuff, come up with the concept of it, how do you do it? Is it kind of, you know, maybe when, as you were saying, chatting with your housemate and your boyfriend and going, oh, I remember that. And then you just kind of go with it? Or do you sit down and try and write them? Or do you just improv?
I improv every one, so I just have a bullet point of the idea, and then I just turn the camera on and see what comes out. Because most of the time, I'll start with one idea, and I'll do like a little nuance or a little thing in that within the idea to create another one. If that makes sense, so I just drop bullet points as I go along, and then that just spirals into more ideas and more ideas.
Do you ever hit a wall?
Oh yeah, I hit a wall about a year ago. I ran out of teach stuff about a year ago, but somehow I just managed to find one more idea. Every now and then I find one more idea. But I've like transitioned into like mum sketches as well now. So the teacher stuff, I can't think of any other idea that I could possibly do. I'm pretty sure I'll probably come up with one, but.
Do you feel like a pressure? Because now you've got a consistent following. Do you feel a pressure to produce quality content, or is it quantity? Because it's so, I don't know, you're on your phone and it's so easy to consume. And ultimately, you know, it's just a 1 minute video or however long it is. Do you feel that pressure to create more or quality?
I prefer quality. Well, mostly if I find it funny, I'll put it out. But if I used to buckle under the pressure of trying to get one video a day, sometimes two videos a day. But when you make comedy sketches, it's so hard to constantly come up with new ideas daily, get them right and push them out in time. So I'd kind of just create content now when I feel like I'm in the mood to, because then I feel like that will translate better as well if I'm in the mood, or if I have like a really random funny 5 minutes. Do you like when the dog gets the zoomies and they run everywhere?
I get that
in like human form. So if I do that, then I just like, I think, right, I'll just film some TikToks now because I just feel weird. And I think that's like when I work best.
You need that kind of creative energy though. You know, it's like that, as you say, like it's kind of tentative, nervous, crazy, energetic, just commitment to something. And then you just go for it. That's really interesting. So what do you, in terms of your day-to-day life then, it's not like a normal job, you know, let's talk about that for real. You know, you're self-employed and you create your own structure. What's that like for you? Do you find that difficult?
Not really, to be fair, because now I'm in the routine of doing things how I'm used to doing it. Like if I get a job through, I like to wait. It's such a bad way, but it just works for me. I like to wait really until the last day that I can do it, in order to do it, because then I have to do it. You know what I mean? I've got no choice but to do it. But if I film and I know I've got like a week and a half to do this job, I will do it. And if I don't like it, I'll be like, oh, I can't bother it, I'll try tomorrow. And then it just breaks me out of that in the moment humor of getting it right the first time. Whereas if I have to do it on the last day, or maybe not the last, it's a bit extreme, maybe like 2 or 3 days before it's due in case anything goes wrong, I've got no choice but to get it right. So it just works better for me.
That's interesting. And do you still find time to kind of switch off? Because it can be such a consuming thing. As you say you have time to devote it to creating content and then doing these jobs and stuff. Do you have time to just switch off and kind of go, right, actually, this is me time? Do you know what I mean?
Yes and no, because I feel like I get wrapped up, and I've spoken to a lot of people actually. I constantly am thinking about things to record and film, because the worst thing for someone, if you do social media, is you're just going to die out and then that's it, you're done, really. You're basically, your career's over. So it's really hard to not think of what to post. And sometimes you get really wrapped up in that. And like, I can't just sit down and not think of it. I'd have to like, I'm not doing anything for the next 5 days. And then in my head, I know not to think of anything for the next 5 days. But your mind's just constantly going, because you have to think of what to do for the jobs and film the jobs, edit the jobs, and also keep up your TikTok, Instagram, if you do YouTube, all of these other platforms. And also I'm trying to write my own show. So it's finding time to do that, and then normal life things, social life. And it seems like such an easy job from the outside, but it literally consumes your whole day. Even if you're not doing anything, it feels like you're constantly... You feel bad for resting, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I do get that completely. What about then when lockdown ended and you were able to go out and about, and then you probably for the first time people started to recognize you, being like, oh my God, it's Kieran, amazing. What was that like? What was that experience like?
It was really, really weird, I'm not going to lie, because even when I got like 10,000 followers, that to me was ridiculous. And, when my following grew to like, I think it was maybe 300K, then lockdown ended, or well, the restrictions eased, so people were out and about. I didn't correlate the numbers to people actually knowing, if you know what I mean.
I just found
numbers on the screen. I didn't realize people actually would know who I was. And where I've got such a distinctive look, I don't really know anyone who looks like me. And if I do such a specific niche as like teacher stuff, it's kind of instantly recognizable. So it was really, really weird. And I was so awkward. I felt so bad. This one girl in Cup, I can still remember it now. She came up to me and she said, "Oh my God, I really like this stuff." And I just didn't say anything. I was so like, "Oh my God, what do I do?" And I felt like I was the one who should have got nervous. Well, I was absolutely shit in my pants, I'm going to lie. But I felt awful, and she was so sweet, and I felt so bad when I left. And then since then, I just always say, like, give people the time of day.
What happened? Did you take a photo with her?
No, I literally just did that. I know. It was awful. Absolutely awful.
Do you also have that pressure when you're out and about to be funny? Because there's this difference between Kieran the person and then Kieran the person who's behind the sketches. Is there that pressure?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people... I mean, to be fair, the teacher character is pretty much an extension of my personality anyway. Obviously, it's a bit... It's like definitely amped up. But a lot of people say, "Oh, can you do a video quick?" And obviously I just snap straight into character. So I don't, it's only when people ask me, I'll like snap into character, or people will like, they'll shout like my phrases at me, and obviously I'll do it back just as like banter. But there's never like a pressure to do so. Especially sometimes if I'm in a rush or not in the best of moods, I'll still give people like the time of day and say hello and speak to them. But it's very, like, it's probably noticeable that I'm very like, rushed or something. So
sure, yeah, that's really nice that you actually do it though, because, you know, again, especially when there's apps like Cameo and things where you can ultimately, they can help run your self-employment business, you know. Yeah, it's great that you actually are willing to do that, because I know that, I'm sure that there are content creators that wouldn't.
Yeah I'm very cautious of never letting someone have a bad time when they meet me, because it's probably the worst thing to meet someone that you actually like to watch or you like or look up to, in a sense, and then they're just not it. It's just very like
So a question, yeah, as well then, does being the funny person in your friendship group necessarily correlate to being funny on social media? Is that a difficult kind of transition?
No, I think it's pretty much just the same. I've always been like the class clown, especially in school. And we're in like friendship groups, but to be fair, all my friendship group, we have like the same humor. We all pretty much do like similar things. But yeah, it's quite an easy transition.
How do you reflect on your time at school then? Is that a positive experience when you look back on it?
It was just all right. I mean, people would like try and torment me for, because they thought I was gay. They were right back then. I didn't. I was like, no, I'm not. So I never used to get bullied as such, but people used to try and torment me, but I never used to let it affect me, because I just laugh at everything anyway. So my defense mechanism is just laughter. I rely on laughter to get through so many things. But yeah, my school was just all right. It was funny, had some funny memories, but I never had a bad time at school. So
how do you, did you struggle with identity growing up then?
No, I just think I grew up finding everyone attractive, like from all genders, and then it wasn't until like I realized in college, oh, I have like more of a liking to, I think I can appreciate a good looking woman and be like, yeah, you're very attractive, but not sexually, if that makes sense. And I think it just took some time for me to figure out the two.
Sure. Okay. How did that help then? How did you do that? Because I know that there are so many young adults now growing up, going through school, especially when you kind of hit 13 and you start to feel things, and they find it difficult, you know, knowing, because there's, especially when there's, as you know, Instagram posting, all these influencers posting things. How do you kind of know what to do, where to say yes, where to say no, what feelings to accept?
I feel like it's just down to every individual. You kind of know in yourself what feels right and what feels wrong. Obviously when you're younger, a lot of people like experiment, and you're young, people just don't know about, you don't know about all these different feelings and all that stuff. And it's normal just to follow whatever you're feeling, if that makes sense, towards any gender. For me, it was just probably that experimenting age. And then I realized, okay, this, the attraction I have for men is a lot higher at a sexual level. And then I realized that the appreciation that I have for a woman isn't the same level as for a man. And I suppose it's also, when you grow up, there's so much, you're scared because of what people think around you or family and all that stuff. And it's not until like you, if you accept it yourself, people around you can't, they can't say anything. Cause if you're not embarrassed by it, if you're like, yeah, I am, so what? They're like, oh, okay, well then I can't really say anything to piss you off because you're fine with it. So.
So what age then did you accept these feelings in terms of knowing that you, you know, like boys?
What was I in college?
16, 17?
I think from around that age, I was very like, okay, I think so. I'm not definitely sure. And then when I got with my boyfriend, who I'm still with now, that's when I was like, yeah, oh, I started seeing. I was like, yeah, this is pretty much solidified for me. So that was like 17, 18, 19. I'd say around 17, 18.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but a quick note from our series sponsor, RCK Partners. If you're looking to take advantage of R&D tax credits to boost your business's cash flow, RCK Partners can help you. Simply head to rck.partners or follow the link in the podcast description. Now, back to Kieran.
Okay, sure. So when we, when you look at that now, and I know that sometimes these stories are particularly personal, but do you remember kind of talking to your family about it?
No. Well, I went to friends first and then family, just because my dad was very against. He's like, he's Jamaican and very like the man's man. So it's, he was very not for it. And it was very scary because he was basically the person in the household that you didn't want to piss off. You know what I mean? But my mum, like she couldn't give two. You know what I mean? She's so open. And also, like, her brother's gay, my uncle's gay. Then my dad used to speak to my uncle. It's very, like, confusing for me because I didn't know what, where the line was crossed. But, yeah, I remember speaking to my mum, but I told mum, and then I couldn't tell my dad. She told my dad. And that was, like, a scary time because I was like, oh, what do I do? You know what I mean? But to my mum, I was more comfortable, and then everyone else. It felt weird speaking, even saying the words, I'm gay, for so long. And then... yeah, just became normal, I suppose, in, like, within myself.
Are you happy if we talk about your dad for a second?
Yeah, sure.
So what was, so when your mum spoke to him then, in terms of that acceptance then, was it a matter of that kind of mental thought process of you thought it was going to be way worse than it was?
Ish. Well, I wasn't there to, like, I wasn't at home when mum told dad to receive whatever he said, I don't know. And then it took a long time for us to even be able to speak. We've only really recently started speaking, and that's like 5.5 years later. And it's just, he was the type of person not to be emotional anyway. He's not a very emotional person. I didn't rely on him emotionally. So for me, it wasn't as hard as, say, if it was my mum, who I rely on all, like, she's like my emotional support, like 100%. Obviously, it affected me because obviously I just wanted everything to be normal, just be like a normal function family. But then again, what is normal? But yeah, it was hard, but not as hard as I thought it would be. Mostly because I moved to London the year after anyway, so I wasn't at home. We had time apart. And I think when he just saw that I was the same person as before, it was then easier for him to just accept it and just be like, well, look, nothing's really changed except from what I do behind closed doors. And first of all, why think of that anyway? You know what I mean? That's always my number one argument. It's like, I don't think about you doing behind closed doors. So why is what I do behind closed doors bothering you the slightest?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got a question. When did you first become aware of your own mental health, or have you always been quite content with it?
I've always been quite content with it. I mean, I've had slight struggles, but I'm very good at just dealing with stuff on my own. First time I noticed it was probably end of school, beginning of college. But I think I've always surrounded myself with people that make me feel good, or I make feel good through laughter, people that we pick each other up. So I've always had, like, even if I felt shit, if I didn't tell people about it, just being around them in their presence, just speaking about anything else, would just make me forget about stuff. And when I forget about stuff, it's pretty much just gone and I don't care about it anymore.
Mm, that's really great. And I think that's so important, having that safe community of friends that A, you trust, but B, that you can just be unapologetically yourself with, and just have that, you know, I dare I say the word banter, but that relationship of, you know, conversation, which is so great. So let's talk about drama school then. So you went there at what, 18, 19?
19
with this vision of training to become an actor, to be the next actor. How did you find the training? Was it mentally exhausting?
It was a lot. It wasn't like normal uni, because you go in at, what time did we start? 8? I think we started at 8, and then you'd be there till 7 p.m. And that's Monday to Friday. Obviously, you have periods to break, sometimes like a 2-hour where you don't have a class. But like, if there wasn't a time where we had days off, or we have lectures from home, like we're in for, because you go from like ballet, then to singing, then to acting, then straight to tap, then straight to street dance. And it was very exhausting, but it kind of just got into that routine and it just felt normal.
That's really interesting, because I went to uni and did drama instead. And obviously significantly less hours, but so did you ever get out of uni before COVID?
No.
Not uni, so drama school.
I was in my third year. We'd done our third year show. And then we were, we'd done our third year show, and then we were training, rehearsing for our agent showcase. So you have two shows in third year. And it was within that training period, it was end of March when it locked down. And that's when it cut short. And we all thought it was 2 weeks and 2.5 years later.
Yeah.
So we didn't graduate properly like until last year, August. And obviously I left in 2020.
So what was the thought process then? You know, because you wanted to take this career further into acting. And I don't know, is that still an aim? Is that still one of the goals for you?
For right now, no, just because it depends, really. Because business-wise, if I put my business head on, the money I get from social media is a lot more than what I'd get to go on stage, and for a lot less of the work. Or like physical hours to be somewhere, you know what I mean? I'd love to do it maybe in a few years, but to me now, I still kind of perform on social media. Mm. So that's still me performing as a job, but just through social media.
And you've still got that creative outlet, if that makes
sense. Yeah, 100%. I mean, I definitely 1,000% would go straight into a TV series now, like a comedy show. Comedy series or a comedy role in a series, I'd go straight into that tomorrow. But like, I wanted to be in musicals and like the West End and touring and stuff, but now I don't think I'd ever go back to that.
No, I think that's fair enough. I'm interested to touch on it, and please reveal as much or as little as you desire, because it is your life and your job. But I wanted to talk about TikTok and the TikTok fund, because it's something that obviously I do not have a Scooby-Doo about.
Okay.
But in terms of the percentage of what you get from TikTok itself, and then actually brand deals, private videos, all this stuff. What is TikTok compared to all of that?
Nothing. So
really?
It's not at all. So if you got like 1.5 million views, you'd get like £25 from TikTok. That's like how much you'd get, really. And if your views climb, no matter how long it takes that video to get the views, you'll get the same amount of money, if that makes sense.
Mm.
That's just done by the number of views. Whereas like the good money comes from brand deals and sponsored posts and all of that stuff. It's considerably, considerably different.
That's really interesting. Is that where your agent comes in and plays for you? Do they approach your agent, your manager?
Yeah. So like the management team now basically take over everything for me. They'll come to me and they say, Uber's sent you this job. You need to do like one TikTok for X amount of money. They can use the footage for this long, however long. you can't work for another brand, a competitor brand, for like 2 weeks, or just as the campaign's live. And then they'll do like all the contracts, they'll bargain to get you a better price, because obviously, I mean, if they get me a better price, they get more money, the stuff like that. So, but they just take off all of the stress and then basically just tell me what to do. I send over a creative idea, get signed off, and then I do it. Then they'll probably send it back and say, can you change this, can you change that, can you change that? And then just, that's pretty much the whole process of that.
So what would be your suggestion or word of advice to an aspiring content creator?
Honestly, just do what you find funny or good or you love, because other people find enjoyment in you enjoying yourself. Because I don't follow anyone on TikTok that is doing something they don't want to do, because it's not enjoyable to watch. And if you want to turn it into a career, just don't sell yourself short. It might sound like, because I've never had money growing up at all, and I was in complete shock at what someone could give you just to promote them. And my word, if someone's just starting, like, go really, really high, and it's probably still low for the, in a short form, because I kind of drug that answer out a bit, in a short form, just do what you want to do. If you enjoy it, if you love it, if it makes you happy, if it makes you laugh, whatever it is, just go with that, because other people enjoy you enjoying yourself. And also, if you want to turn it into a career, just don't sell yourself short, because you can push these brands for money, basically. They will try and spend as little as they can, obviously, because that's what any person would want to do. But yeah, don't sell yourself short. Go in really high, because the worst that can happen is they just say, oh no, the budget's this. And you say, maybe this, and then just meet you in the middle.
Amazing. Good advice. Right, obviously you've had a whirlwind couple of years then, this rise of your social following. What has been your biggest pinch yourself moment so far?
You know what? There's been some amazing moments. A few of them have been, I went to the BAFTAs, and I never ever thought that I'd ever go to the BAFTAs. Actually walked down the carpet, and it was just incredible. I had the most amazing experience. And also, people that I look up to and idolise, like, in for comedy and stuff, have like noticed me, and that for me is the most mental thing. That it's just, yeah, it's just absolutely crazy when I think about the people that I've like looked up to, and they say, "Oh yeah, I love your work." And I went to a screening of Mo Gilligan's new show on Netflix at the time, there was like a room full of so many creatives. There was celebrities in that room, everything. And then we arrived late. Well, not late, but we were the last ones in, because it was a free bar, so we were just absolutely ready to the bar. So the only spaces available was at the front. And then when Mo walked in, he, like, before he said anything, he just stopped and said to me, "Oh my god, you don't do the teacher stuff. I feel like my head teacher's actually sat here right now. Like, I completely love everything you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing." And he literally spoke to me in front of everyone for like 2 minutes, just praising me. And I just thought it was just mental. I never ever thought that someone of that like greatness would ever know as I was. So it's weird.
That's amazing. That's so fulfilling, you know, kind of makes it all worthwhile. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, literally. And like, especially a comedian saying that to me, and I'm doing comedy stuff, it was just so validating as well.
Yeah, definitely. Now, what are those future plans and goals then? I know you've got a new podcast coming out, which is tremendously exciting.
Yes. We're releasing the podcast on, I think, on the 31st of August. And then also, I'm currently writing a show, a family comedy sitcom. Family, what did I just say?
Family comedy sitcom.
Yeah, there we go. Let's go with that. about my family. And yeah, I just want to be in a comedy show. I don't know if to write it and star in it, because where it's my family, I don't know if that's too close to home, if it's going to be a bit weird. Or yeah, I definitely just want to explore loads of these avenues from where I'm at now, just see what sticks.
Amazing. Right, the final question that I ask every guest on the podcast is, what does the word headstrong mean to you?
Headstrong, that's a good question. I think, personally, for me, if I said I was headstrong, it means I'm comfortable with myself. basically just to find self-acceptance and self-love and you're able to carry yourself without the reliance of other people. As much as other people around you is there to lift you up, and it's so great to have that support system, you need to find love and acceptance within yourself and for yourself first before you can go out and try and do that with anyone else. So it's just like being comfortable and fully supportive in yourself. That's how I'd see Headstrong.
No, it's a brilliant outlook. I really like that. Thank you so much. What a great episode. It's been great to chat to you. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me. This is going to be great for any new content creators, I hope. And thank you for being so open and honest.
No, thank you for having me. I've had a great time.
And that is the end of this episode of Headstrong. A massive thank you to Kieran for joining me on the podcast. I really enjoyed chatting to him and I love all his content. So go check him out on TikTok and Instagram. They're absolutely quality and I know that you'll enjoy them and find them incredibly funny, just like I do. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please do hit subscribe, give us a rating, leave a review, or share it with your family and friends, or indeed go check out some previous episodes. I will see you next week for another episode of Headstrong.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.